and energy management trainer, Victoria Post. In this hour, Victoria and her guests explore our individual and collective calls to greatness and support you in finding the courage and resources you need to follow through. Can you hear it? Your greatness is calling. Now here's your host, Victoria Post.
And greetings, blessings, and welcome to A Call to Greatness. I am your host, Victoria Post, spiritual counselor, energy management trainer. And if at the end of this show, if you'd like to know more about me or about my work, feel free to check out my website at www.spiritalive.com. Today we have what I think is a very timely, very important show. Today we are going to be looking at the issue of forgiveness. It is one of, I think, the most important topics that we can be addressing in these crazy, crazy times. For me, in many, many ways, I think forgiveness is one of the hardest things to do. It's an idea that everybody likes. Of course, forgiveness is a good thing until you actually have something that you need to forgive. It gets really, really, really hard. So I, after hearing the recent stories from the Amish community and their efforts to move forward and their efforts to forgive a man who murdered little girls, young girls in their community, I was so struck by that and how we as a nation need to ask for forgiveness. That's certainly in my opinion. How we as a society forgive and ask for forgiveness, and how we as individuals forgive and ask for forgiveness. So here we are, and I'd like to, before introducing my guests, just give you a moment to connect a little bit with this topic. So I'd like to begin with just a moment of reflection and looking at your own life and the week that's going by whenever you're listening to this, and just see if as you think about your life, as you breathe your own spirit into your body, are there places where you are in the midst of doing forgiveness work, where you haven't quite forgiven, but you're in the process? Are there places in your own life where you need to ask for forgiveness, where there are maybe small infractions, not necessarily huge ones, but even small things for which you need to ask for forgiveness? And I want you to be aware of the capacity and the power and the courage that is already within you. And just invite that courage, invite that which is already within you to be present as you listen to this show. Bringing your own ability to accept, to embrace, to apologize, and yes, to feel whatever it is you feel, any hurt, any betrayal, anger, and also remember joy, that in doing forgiveness work, that's hard work, to remember joy. And with that, I would like to introduce two very, very special guests. It is such a privilege and a delight to be joined by incredible people. And I'd like to welcome both of you. I'd like to welcome first Michael Henderson, who is a freelance journalist and author. He's written over 9 books, the 2 latest, See You After the Duration, which is the story of evacuees, the children who were evacuated from England during World War II, of which Michael was one of them, and also the book that we will be talking about today, Forgiveness, Breaking the Chain of Hate. Michael is currently residing in the UK and has lived in Oregon, spent quite a bit of time in the States, spent some 30 years working toward peace and understanding in all sorts of various interesting capacities. I'll let you tell some of your own story, Michael, but welcome to A Call to Greatness. It's such a delight to have you.
Thank you very much.
And also joining us is Jonathan Relucio from here in the Bay Area. Jonathan is Filipino in background and has been studying and practicing and being part of educating about nonviolence, worked with groups such as Pache Bene in its Oakland office, as well as a number of other groups. And Jonathan, I asked you here because you've had experiences in your own life where I'm imagining you've had to forgive again and again and again. Welcome to A Call to Greatness.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Vicki.
I would like to start by asking each of you what is it about, why forgiveness? Michael, you've written quite a bit on forgiveness. You've written a couple of books, The Forgiveness Factor, Forgiveness, Breaking the Chain of Hate. What is so critical about forgiveness? And what is it in your own personal life that drew you to forgive, to work with forgiveness?
Well, I suppose it goes back in many ways to what you said at the beginning about me being evacuated. I was evacuated to the United States during World War II. I was separated from my parents for 5 years. When we came together, it was quite difficult to be united. You know, our parents, I think, expected a quicker obedience than we gave them. They would say, do this, do that. We would say, we don't do it that way in America. We don't do this, we don't do that. America soon became known as WeLand in our family. So we had to find out some way of coming together. And we went to a center of reconciliation in a village called Caux, C-A-U-X, in Switzerland. And there, something dramatic, first of all, happened to my mother, because our family had come from Ireland originally. But in 1922, I mean, we'd lived there for hundreds of years, my family was chucked out of Ireland. My grandfather was told, you leave Ireland by the end of the week or be shot.
Wow.
Our family home was burned to the ground. My mother, I don't think, realized how deeply she felt about having been chucked out of Ireland until at this center, one day, a Catholic senator spoke. We were Protestants. And everything in my mother rebelled against her. Who is this woman talking about unity in Europe? And she chucked me out of my country. But in the spirit of that place, where you take time really to see where you and your people need to be different, rather than pointing the finger of blame, she decided she should go to this lady, Eleanor Butler, and apologize for the indifference we'd shown over many years to Catholics. They became friends, they began to work together, and I think from that I began to see also that forgiveness, repentance, that sort of thing is not just a personal matter, but can affect the life of nations. And it was there that my brother and I really found our calling to take on this work as well.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful example. Jonathan, just to bring your voice in, what is it that's called you to work with nonviolence and kind of what calls you to forgiveness?
I think forgiveness for me has actually been more of a recent practice, you know, and I felt like I was actually not looking for forgiveness, but I felt like Spirit and the universe just kind of like interrupted my kind of program, because actually, you know, I think if I get enough pain and suffering, then I'm going to go ahead and be willing and open to consider other options that I've never considered before. And you know, living really like reacting to conflict and life through physical violence all the way from my earliest memory, from like 4 years old to I think my last street fight was, you know, 23. You know, I was just in enough pain. You know, I was just it was just a very long, long journey of a lot of violence. And I feel like for me, it was like the interruption was, you know, dealing with a lot of street violence, and then actually going ahead and, you know, being able to channel that anger and that violence into social justice work, where actually, you know, physical violence transformed itself into another form of violence, like, you know, looking at the white community as the people who were the cause of all the evil and the bad in the world. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, and all that stemmed from, you know, as I'm looking back on it, on the sexual abuse that I experienced from, you know, I had three caretakers, my mother, my father, and my father's lover, and his partner at the time. And it was him that had abused me for like 7 years during my childhood. So just being able to, like, you know, at some point, like in graduate school, being able to, like, get in touch with that, you know, and realize that, you know, the story is basically this. You know, I was in this class in graduate school, and there was this class called Drum Time, Dream Time, Drama Time. And the instruction of the class, the project of the class, was to go ahead and work with an issue in our life that we hadn't reconciled. And I already had mine all laid out, but it had nothing to do with my sexual abuse issues. It was
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I was the last one in class, and there was this woman who came right before me who basically told a story that was almost just like mine. You know, she talked about her sexual abuse story, and she dramatized that. And I was nowhere near, like, wanting to go ahead and deal with that at that time, but then it just, you know, the timing of that just blew it wide open for me. It was
mm-hmm.
something that I hadn't looked at in years. And
wow.
And for me, that kind of, like, ripped it open. And from that point on, for, like, probably 8 or 9 months, I was just in one of the darkest periods of my life, where I was just in so much emotional pain and hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the grief that, like, poured out, all the anger, all the sadness, all the darkest emotions that I never had felt before until that point just poured out. And literally, I mean, I felt like I had no choice. It was completely out of my control, and I just
mm-hmm.
go ahead and be with it.
Right,
you know?
Right. So there are a couple of things you raised there. One, the power of someone else's courage that inspired you to begin that process of forgiveness, and then having to go through the pain, having to go through the grief and the difficult emotions to get to a place of forgiveness. So when we come back, one of the things I want to talk about is what forgiveness is and what it isn't. So stay with us. We'll be right back on A Call to Greatness.
Your online community for positive change. Heaven's Wave Network.
Can you stay present and centered even when everything around you is completely out of control? Can you find joy, meaning, and peace even when life seems to be falling apart? Can you love yourself even when your inner critic is right? The soul journey is filled with complexities that will take you from adversity to ecstasy through power and vulnerability, from magical moments of connection into deep states of loneliness, from life to death and back again. With all the twists and turns, it's no wonder that we all sometimes have to ask for directions. Victoria Post, licensed minister, clairvoyant, and spiritual counselor, can help you keep your spirit alive while surrendering to your soul's journey. Victoria's mastery is in her ability to communicate information and apply practical and powerful tools to all life situations. She has honed her natural skills through clairvoyant training and years of personal work with Temenos and the Naos Foundation School of Sacred Studies. Clients say she has a healing and calming presence, provides focus and great clarity, and gives them permission to be who they are and make their own choices in life. Victoria offers individual counseling sessions and conducts classes in voice dialogue and other energy work. Additional services include public speaking, officiating for weddings, and other rituals and ceremonies, voice coaching, and customized songs for special occasions. When you're looking for support and guidance provided with absolute integrity, whether you need to appreciate the place you've landed or find the next path to follow, call Victoria Post at 415-928-2711, extension 2, or visit her website, spiritalive.com. Victoria Post at spiritalive.com. Naturally compassionate, innately spiritual, real and down to earth.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome back to A Call to Greatness with Victoria Post. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 866-472-5794. Now back to the program. Here's Victoria.
And welcome back to A Call to Greatness. We are talking today about forgiveness with Michael Henderson, journalist and author of Forgiveness, Breaking the Chain of Hate. And I will tell you straight up, it's one of the most incredible books I've ever read. And also with Jonathan Relucio, who is working currently in the San Francisco Bay Area in nonviolence. And before the break, we were talking about forgiveness and how spirit sort of seems to hand people the assignment here. Forgive this. Take this on. This is the time. Other times we might have to actually choose it. But I want to talk a little bit about what forgiveness is and isn't, because very often I have found in my work that people don't want to forgive because they misunderstand what it actually is. So, Michael, in your work, how would you actually describe what forgiveness really is?
Well, I think it's well described as surrendering the right to get even. It's giving up payback. I think you're right that a lot of people feel that somehow if I forgive, I'm being soft and sentimental, I'm inviting the person to hurt me all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's rather important to realize that this loose phrase we use, forgive and forget, is not correct. One shouldn't forget. Forgiveness isn't necessary. I mean, it can play a smaller role in your life, some event,
mm-hmm.
but one shouldn't forget. And you also are not surrendering the right to justice. You're not excusing what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you rightly said earlier, you talk about a process of forgiving. It's definitely a journey that you undertake.
Right. It doesn't happen in a day.
No, and it may not happen for all time. You may have to, as there's an example in my book of a great French woman there, you know, at one point she thought, am I making a mistake? Was I wrong to forgive? Maybe I was wrong. You've got to work at it. You can't. It isn't something that is easy at all, as you said. And it isn't something that necessarily stays with you without fresh decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again and again and again. Which I imagine you've also experienced, Jonathan, that just because you forgave your caretakers, just because you forgave your family once, doesn't mean it doesn't come up again. Is that correct?
Exactly. I mean, I forgave.
Could you come a little bit closer to your phone, Jonathan? You're a little hard to hear.
Am I? How's this?
That's better.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question one more time?
So I'm just imagining that you have experienced having to forgive again and again.
I have. You know, I mean, my abuser was a white male. You know, and you know, living in this world, I get hooked and triggered all the time by,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm also in social justice work, and I've spent the last over 10 years doing anti-racism work, and you know, and I have that consciousness in terms of institutional racism and working it on a personal level and working
mm-hmm.
on a social structural level. It's like
mm-hmm.
I'm dealing with it all the time, and so
mm-hmm.
you know, just whiteness itself is a trigger for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I have
right.
to go ahead and forgiveness for me is just a practice because I have a very short-term memory of, like, the first time I forgave.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to keep doing it over and over and over again because I lived with that resentment. I've lived with that anger for so long, and it's something that I'm actually very comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Living in anger and resentment feels like home,
mm-hmm.
even though I know it's kind of, like, sick and it creates, you know, a life that I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a habit that my ego has just kind of, like, clung to.
Right.
Asked itself to. And I just have
right.
to keep practicing it to work a different muscle in my
mm-hmm.
body, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is a muscle. I've actually had both experiences. I've had the experience as a blind person, I'm constantly having to forgive people for treating me like a 10-year-old, for not understanding me, for, you know, for all sorts of little things like that. I've also had experiences of being kind of brought to a place of compassion and forgiveness for my father, for example, where the energy and the trigger is no longer in my body. It is not there. And so nothing that happens now triggers it. But I can't say that's true about everything in my life.
Right.
And so sometimes I also think of forgiveness as liberating me. Like there's something I've been carrying around so heavily, and if I can release that, then I still have to deal with the situations that come up. I still have to speak to justice issues. I still have to say when something hurts, but it is also about not carrying, you know, thousands of years worth of stuff to
right.
every single incident. So that's often how I think of it.
Well, I like to share also, you know, I mean, I think after, the more I practice forgiveness, the more I'm able to go ahead and link up with, like, other, you know, white, liberal, white progressive circles, who I usually normally had separated myself past, you know, in my past work. But now it's kind of like I'm actually able, with more practice of forgiveness, I'm actually seeing more to white people than just how they, you know, how they use their privilege
right.
for stuff. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like I can see how generous people are. I can see, like, how committed people are. I can see, like, just the, you know, all their gifts that I never actually saw before I practiced forgiveness.
Yeah,
I mean?
So it does open some doors.
Well, I think it also gives you an advantage. If you approach a person on the basis of forgiveness, somebody you hated, I mean, if you don't, all they see is the chip on your shoulder. You don't get across to them. The only person you're harming is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even help that person open up to something new in their own lives.
Correct.
If you become free yourself, you can actually speak to that person in a way that they will be ready to listen.
Yep.
Did you see that, Michael, even in the example you brought up earlier with your mother? What happened when she actually apologized to that Catholic senator?
Well, I think they became friends, and the Catholic senator actually began to open up to where hatred had played a big part in her life and her country's life.
Mm-hmm.
She went on to found Glen Cree, the great center of reconciliation there.
Wow.
And I think that was a factor in her becoming free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think another example in my book is which, because sometimes people say, well, some things are unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
You may say the Twin Towers event or somebody's raped or something.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything worse than what happened to Moses Kaur, a German woman, a Jew, who was one of the twins experimented on by Dr. Mengele at Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
You'd say, well, that was absolutely unforgivable. She's actually forgiven the doctor who did that. And she said that when this hatred lifted from her shoulders, she was no longer a victim of Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
I was finally free. And she
said,
so I say to everybody, forgive your worst enemy. It will heal your soul and set you free.
Right.
Yeah. I can't imagine, though, how you start a process like that. How you start this process of forgiving something that horrid. Is it any different than when you start forgiving something petty?
Well, you know, I don't think there are any rules on this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to take their own course. I think a lot of it depends sometimes whether you approach this with faith or without faith, sometimes for a larger aim. The French lady, Irène Law, whose son was tortured by the Germans, apologized to the Germans at this center in Switzerland for her hatred. She did this for the motive that she was a great believer in Europe and wanted to build Europe. You'd never rebuild Europe without the Germans, therefore she had to find a way of approaching them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes it comes from the motivation you have.
Yeah.
The other thing I learned early on in life was that all of us need to face up to everything in our own lives. I was given a challenge of four absolute standards of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. And it was shown to me that okay, you may have other person may have done something wrong to you, but is there anything in your side that needs to be put right? And I think that's a part of this in the ingredient in finding a resolution to conflicts,
mm-hmm.
that you face up to your own side need to put things right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and amazing things can happen. Tell the story a little bit of when Irene Laura actually got up and did apologize to the Germans, because that was a very moving story.
Well, Irene Laura came to this center in Switzerland. She'd been a leader of the resistance, and as I say, her son had been tortured. She was elected to Parliament. It was the first intake of women members in Paris, and she was invited to this center in Switzerland. She accepted with alacrity because her children were malnourished. She wanted to get food for them. Never crossed her mind there'd be Germans there, because just so soon after the war, 1947, Germans weren't welcome in international conferences. And when she heard there were Germans there and more were coming, she retreated to her room. But she was challenged beforehand with the question of how you will rebuild Europe without Germany. And she said she stayed there for 3 days and nights, wrestling with the question whether she'd be willing to give up her hatred for the sake of a new Europe.
Mm-hmm.
She came out. Well, it's a long story, but she was there in the hall with all these Germans, and she turned to them, and she said to them, "Will you please forgive me for my hatred?" And she said a German woman came up from the hall, took her arm, took her hand, and she said it was like 100 kilos being lifted from my shoulders.
Mm.
And then she and her husband went to Germany. They spoke all over the country. She apologized everywhere. And the remarkable thing was the number of Germans, and I've met some of them, who for the first time were willing to face up to where they'd been wrong because of Irene's generous approach.
Wow. Wow. It is an amazing door opener, and I think that to me is such an act of greatness, to be willing to go deep enough inside to face up to your part, to face up to something, even in the face of a greater wrong. You know, I don't know, is hatred a greater wrong? Is all the acts committed against her family? Who's to say, and I don't know that it matters, and making something important enough to say, for the sake of Europe, for the sake of rebuilding, I'm willing to do this.
Well, it was the same with my mother being willing to face up to the way we treated Catholics over so many years.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very important ingredient in it.
Absolutely. Wow. We have countless examples of this, even in our own time. I mentioned the Amish at the beginning of the program. People after the fall of the Twin Towers helping Christians rebuilding mosques. There are countless examples of this. And to me, this is a reason to have a great deal of hope. A great deal of hope for this planet.
It's why I tell stories, because I don't think, it may sound funny, but I don't think one can go around prescribing forgiveness for people. I think people have got to find that for themselves. It's entirely voluntary. But I tell stories, and people can identify with those stories, whether there's anything in that experience which relates to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, as I kind of read the book, I want more stories and more stories. It gives me extra courage. And so we're going to continue with some stories and a little bit of a discussion. I also want to talk a little bit about how to actually strengthen the forgiveness muscle. You'll have it, but how to strengthen it. When we come back on A Call to Greatness, stay with us. And remember, you are welcome to join us if you have a question or a comment, to call us at 866-472-5795. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Can you stay present and centered even when everything around you is completely out of control? Can you find joy, meaning, and peace even when life seems to be falling apart? Can you love yourself even when your inner critic is right? The soul journey is filled with complexities that will take you from adversity to ecstasy through power and vulnerability, from magical moments of connection into deep states of loneliness, from life to death and back again. With all the twists and turns, it's no wonder that we all sometimes have to ask for directions. Victoria Post, licensed minister, clairvoyant, and spiritual counselor, can help you keep your spirit alive while surrendering to your soul's journey. Victoria's mastery is in her ability to communicate information and apply practical and powerful tools to all life situations. She has honed her natural skills through clairvoyant training and years of personal work with Temenos and the Naos Foundation School of Sacred Studies. Clients say she has a healing and calming presence provides focus and great clarity and gives them permission to be who they are and make their own choices in life. Victoria offers individual counseling sessions and conducts classes in voice dialogue and other energy work. Additional services include public speaking, officiating for weddings, and other rituals and ceremonies, voice coaching, and customized songs for special occasions. When you're looking for support and guidance provided with absolute integrity, whether you need to appreciate the place you've landed or find the next path to follow, call Victoria Post at 415-928-2711, extension 2, or visit her website, spiritalive.com. Victoria Post at spiritalive.com. Naturally compassionate, innately spiritual, real and down to earth.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome back to A Call to Greatness with Victoria Post. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 866-472-5794. Now back to the program. Here's Victoria.
And welcome back to A Call to Greatness. And today, the call is one of forgiveness. I do think forgiveness is one of the greatest things that we can do, one of the greatest acts of courage. Also, perhaps one of the most difficult. And joining me are Michael Henderson, author of Forgiveness, Breaking the Chain of Hate, also a freelance journalist. And also joining me is Jonathan Relucio, educator and facilitator of the practice of nonviolence here in the Bay Area. So there are so many places that I'd like to go, but I'd like to start by talking about healing history, because so much of forgiveness is based on something that happened in the past, wrongs that happened in the past. And in your book, Michael, you talked a lot about, you had a whole section on healing history, can we heal history, and your example of Irène Lohr doing her part to help history heal, help French and Germans heal. And I would really like to have you share with people how much of that is actually still happening. Like, you listed just even in, the list in 1998 of how much happened in the world, whether it all bore fruit or not, that is changing the way that we move toward peace, that's changing the way that we heal. And I'd like you to just talk about what your experience is in terms of forgiveness and healing history.
Well, a lot of experts in the field, or people who regard themselves as experts in the diplomatic and political field, have written off forgiveness as something just for churches or mosques or something. But I think that what has really shaken them is what happened with Nelson Mandela. Because 15 years ago, no one would have given any hope that that country could have got to where it has today without a civil war or bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it showed that forgiveness is much more than that. I've put a list down, you mentioned, in 1998, it was just before the book came out for the first edition, of some of the things that are going on. As you say, some of them never came to fruition, some of them have been disappointing, but I think that they indicate the kind of way people are thinking now. And I think with the coming year, for instance, in Britain, with the 200th anniversary of the ending of the slave trade, there's going to be quite a focus on that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted me to read some of this out? Legislatures, churches, organizations in Australia apologized to the Aborigine people for the way their children were taken from them and often abused. The United Church of Canada similarly apologized to Native Americans for their abuse at church-operated schools. The Prime Minister of Japan apologized to British ex-prisoners of war for his country's treatment of them. The Italian president apologized to the people of Ethiopia for the occupation of their country. The Pope apologized to Jews for the shortcomings of the Church in confronting Nazism in World War II. The Good Friday Agreement was signed in Northern Ireland, with the Nobel Peace Prize being awarded to a Catholic and a Protestant political leader. An interim peace accord was established in the Middle East. The report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa was released. The British Prime Minister expressed regret to the Irish for Britain's role in the famine 150 years earlier, reopened the inquiry into Bloody Sunday, as it was called, and spoke to the Irish Parliament. President Clinton apologized in Africa for the slave trade. The President of Argentina expressed regret to the British for the Falklands-Malvinas War. In October that year, Ecuador and Peru ended one of Latin America's longest territorial disputes. The same month saw the start of a new partnership between Japan and South Korea, and so on.
Wow. I mean, this is all in 1 year.
This is all in 1 year, yes.
I mean, that is just amazing to me. When you can put all of that side by side and say there is movement in this direction.
Yeah. And, of course, there's an awful lot on a lesser level that never gets reported because the media tends to focus on the divisive
ones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is absolutely true. Wow. And you know, that doesn't even address how much of this is happening every day with people all over the place. Have you noticed any changes in your own family, Jonathan, from your work?
I have.
Again, if you could come closer.
Yes, I have.
There you go.
I feel like, you know, the more I forgive, the more, I mean, I think my behavior changes and just the way, you know, because in some ways, you know, I still hold a lot of, you know, some resentment towards my father,
mm-hmm.
you know, for, like, allowing, you know, in my view, for allowing what happened, you know, that
sure.
was my partner. But, you know, I have to remember that, like, my work with Pache Bene is, like, I think the most valuable thing with Pache Bene is that I spent 3.5 years listening to people's stories of when they were either a victim of violence or a perpetrator of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
that gives me perspective on what, you know, what Ed was my abuser, and then what my dad is like. I mean, if there's something going on with them in their childhood and in their past that
mm-hmm.
that basically had them do what they did to me. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? And so when I go ahead, and even though I told my father the whole story about what had happened,
mm-hmm.
and the thing of it is that I have to go, you know, looking at the patterns and the kind of like commonalities that I kind of like listen to in the stories with Pache Bene. I mean, I feel like I have to go ahead and do the best of my ability to hold a space of compassion for my father and Ed as well. So when I do that, I feel like, you know, I receive that in turn, because me and him were going at it for years because of those hidden resentments.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was resentful at him, or he didn't even know, like, I was jabbing him for some reason, but he would go ahead and do the same thing back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when I go ahead and hold the practice of, when I go ahead and practice that kind of compassion, just because I've heard stories, you know, over and over again of, like, of how that cycle of violence kind of, like, perpetuates itself, I bring that into my own home, into my own family, and, you know, my father kind of, like, models the way I treat him, and then it ends up, like, it just, there's a ripple effect within
mm-hmm.
the family.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, you know, I don't have a theoretical framework. It's just kind of like that's how
mm-hmm.
it's for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just I hear stories and then I kind of like imagine, like, you know what? There's a possibility that my dad also went through some pretty hard stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's like, you know, it kind of like enables me to go ahead and like see him as a human being with limitations as well, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's some
right.
brokenness in him, just as much as that there's brokenness in all those people's stories
yeah.
that I've heard.
Yeah. Does this seem, in what you've seen, Michael, to be a key ingredient? It certainly does to me, if you can find a place of compassion for the perpetrators.
Yes, of course, not everybody is able to do that right away, but I agree, that's very much part of it, yes.
I was thinking about the Dalai Lama as an example of that.
Yes.
Who talks about compassion for the Chinese.
Well, one of his monks who came back and was worried because Dalai Lama asked him what he was worried about, and he was worried that he was losing his compassion for the Chinese, which is a turn
mm-hmm.
the thing around, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So building compassion in order to forgive is its own process. Do you find, either one of you here, that there have to be certain conditions in order to forgive? Is it possible to forgive without closure, without the justice first? Have you kind of found that there are times when it's easier or harder, or there are certain conditions?
Well, some people will tell you that there are conditions, and I think some certain religions I think the Jewish people have laid down certain conditions when it's right to forgive. My own experience is that you the way God works in people's hearts, or the Spirit moves people, can't be subject to conditions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are ready to forgive right away, and some take a long time. For instance, a friend of mine who was imprisoned by the British in Northern Ireland was actually tortured. Took his case to the Human Rights Commission in Europe and won his case and won money from the British government. He was not willing to face up to forgiving what happened until that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't lay conditions like that, like Irene Law. The Germans should really have apologized to her first, I suppose, but she felt that she should take that first step.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with Merle Evers Williams, you know, who wasn't willingly to forgive until the truth came out about what happened to her husband, but then was. So, you know, again, you just can't lay down rules the way it'll work.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of amazing to me that sometimes it just happens. I had an incident that I'd almost forgotten about that happened 9 years ago, and I was quite upset about it, didn't do anything, didn't confront the person, just had no contact. And I woke up 2 weeks ago on a Saturday morning out of the blue. Other things, I guess, had triggered a similar feeling. Out of the blue, wrote this person a letter, said I'd like to have a conversation about it. And there is, I can't find the charge on the incident anymore.
Hmm. There's a rather similar story of that Norwegian in my book, who was, as a teenager, was put in prison when the Germans occupied his country, was tortured badly, condemned to death, and was only saved by the war coming to an end. At the end of the war, he took it out on the German guards in a quite cruel way.
Mm-hmm.
He apologized for that, but only years later, I think it was 40 years later, it suddenly dawned on him. He'd never done anything to put anything right with one of the guards who had asked for some water, and he just cruelly thrown a bucket of water at him.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of how he then went to look for the fellow's family, the fellow had died, but actually met the children, and had a remarkable story of reconciliation there.
Wow.
But that hadn't even occurred to him for 40 years.
Right. And suddenly it's like a call to bring something right.
Well, it's that journey you're on, a further step to take on it.
Mm-hmm. 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 Have you seen experiences like that in your work with Pacha Bene, Jonathan?
I think a lot of my work with Pacha Bene has been about, like, workshops and education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in terms of, like, face-to-face kind of, like, conflict where I'm actually...
Right.
You know, that's still another stage of my work.
Another stage of the journey. And we'll talk a little bit about some resources and how you might continue to work building your forgiveness muscle when we return on A Call to Greatness. So stay with us.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
Can you stay present and centered even when everything around you is completely out of control? Can you find joy, meaning, and peace even when life seems to be falling apart? Can you love yourself even when your inner critic is right? The soul journey is filled with complexities that will take you from adversity to ecstasy through power and vulnerability, from magical moments of connection into deep states of loneliness, from life to death and back again. With all the twists and turns, it's no wonder that we all sometimes have to ask for directions. Victoria Victoria Post, licensed minister, clairvoyant, and spiritual counselor, can help you keep your spirit alive while surrendering to your soul's journey. Victoria's mastery is in her ability to communicate information and apply practical and powerful tools to all life situations. She has honed her natural skills through clairvoyant training and years of personal work with Temenos and the Naos Foundation School of Sacred Studies. Clients say she has a healing and calming presence, provides focus and great clarity, and gives them permission to be who they are and make their own choices in life. Victoria offers individual counseling sessions and conducts classes in voice dialogue and other energy work. Additional services include public speaking, officiating for weddings, and other rituals and ceremonies, voice coaching, and customized songs for special occasions. When you're looking for support and guidance provided with absolute integrity, whether you need to appreciate the place you've landed or find the next path to follow, call Victoria Post at 415-928-2711, extension 2, or visit her website, SpiritAlive.com. Victoria Post at SpiritAlive.com. Naturally compassionate, innately spiritual, real, and down to earth.
Adding fractions is nothing.
For real?
Look, these are denominators. You multiply this one so that it's the same as that, then you add them up.
Man, that's easy.
Charles Bennett dreamed of returning to the old neighborhood as a teacher, but without money for college, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A message from the UNCF and the Ad Council.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome back to A Call to Greatness with Victoria Post. If you have a question or comment, call us toll free at 866-472-5794. Now back to the program. Here's Victoria.
And welcome back to A Call to Greatness, where we are talking about forgiveness with Michael Henderson and Jonathan Relucio. And Michael's book, Forgiveness, Breaking the Chain of Hate. If this dialogue is inspiring you, I would highly, highly recommend reading this book. It's not a long book, but it is just packed full of stuff. And, you know, Michael, what was your hope when you wrote that book? What's your hope for people?
Well, I hope, I mean, I an earlier book I wrote about women peacemakers, when one woman who'd read it came to the end, she said to me, I realize if those women can do it, so can I. And I thought that's really my motive with telling the stories, is to encourage people to think, well, gosh, if those people can do it, because sometimes they're exotic people who are in leadership positions, but quite often they're ordinary people, mm-hmm. and if those people can do it, then so can I. And it gives a few pointers, I think, of what people can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think one of the hardest things would be having to forgive and then go through the process, for example, of rebuilding trust. I mean, I see this a lot between friendships or spouses or organizations. You know, what happens if you're still connected to them? You can't just walk away, but you have to actually rebuild the trust. You have to somehow recreate the partnership, and I think this would be true personally and nations. Either one of you have anything to kind of contribute on that one?
Well, I would just say on the other side to it, mm-hmm. when you have forgiven somebody or when there's repentance, it doesn't automatically lead to a reconciliation or conflict resolution, and doesn't even need to if a person mm-hmm. doesn't want to do it. The person may do that for their own sake, and that's that.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to go the further step of making a springboard to something new, that's a big step for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there are resources to help with all of these processes, the forgiveness, the repentance, the reconciliation. Jonathan, I know you do a lot of work with helping people through conflict situations. Any resources you can recommend to people who do want to take on that part of the process in addition to the forgiveness work?
I think the foundation of my nonviolence training and education has been with Apache Bennett, so you can find them at www.pachabene.org.
Okay, can you spell Pachabene for people who don't know?
E-B-E-N-E.
So that's PACEEBENE.org. Pachabene.org. I highly recommend that as work for rebuilding the trust and creating trust. And Michael, any resources you'd like to offer to people?
Well, the organization who are responsible for running the center in Switzerland Co. Mm-hmm. are now called Initiatives of Change. They have a website, iofc.org. I was onto that a few minutes before the program, and interestingly, there's a story on there which about two friends of mine from Nigeria, one a Christian, one a Muslim, a Christian minister, a Muslim imam, and the story of how they've come together. And there's also another imam, one of our leading imams from Britain, talking about building bridges with other faiths. And that, of course, is a very crucial issue at the moment.
Absolutely.
There's also my own website, if I could be as modest
Absolutely.
As to mention that. It's michaelhenderson.org.uk. And if you wanted to click on to articles, I've written a lot of articles on related subjects there.
It's a great website. I've had a great time perusing that website and learned a great deal from it, actually.
And, of course, the biggest resource is in your own life, really. One of the things I learned at that center, and I've applied all my life, is to get up earlier every morning, to take time in quiet. Some people might call it taking time to listen to God. Others might call it conscience or the inner voice. But really taking time at the beginning of a day to clear away the debris from the day before, get perspective on the day ahead. And I think that helps you a lot as you go into a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And that for me, what I would like to offer you is from my website, there are some resources and some tools as well at www.spiritalive.com. And I would encourage any of you who are so inclined to learn what you can about working with energy and moving energy, because in the forgiveness work, what you can do is literally clear out old energy and make space for new. And the more you do that, the more it actually builds that muscle. The more that you can actually always look at your side of a conflict. If you're involved in a difficult situation, you have a part in it. Whether you're the one who's actually the victim, at some point you can really look at what is my part, where do I need to ask for forgiveness, and where am I called to forgive. So what I would like to leave people with is I hope that at least out of this show you have a better understanding of the nature of forgiveness and some additional inspiration for including forgiveness in your way of life. Jonathan, Michael, anything you'd like to leave people with?
I think you've really probably said it all, I think. I can't think of anything that I would add, I don't think.
Do you plan to have any more editions of this book, Michael?
Well, at the moment I'm working on a German edition with new stories. I've worked in this one from Nigeria, and there's other stories, particularly in relation to Britain and Germany, and the need to put things right, of course, the Dresden bombing and things like that. I've had a request from a publisher in a university in Texas, Baylor, for a book. But we haven't yet decided what I might write. It'll certainly be stories. Because of the book, my book launching, a fellow came breezing up to me and told me he was with some leading figure's office, and he said, "Is your approach journalistic or analytical?" And not thinking quickly, I said, "Journalistic." He said, "Ah, you'll tell stories." So that is my approach, really.
Yes, you're
but of course, journalists could also be analytical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I think you bring together the best of journalistic qualities and the best of storytelling.
Thanks.
Because a journalist has to know how to find a good story. And you've done it very, very well. Again, the book is Forgiveness, it's Breaking the Chain of Hate. And Jonathan, anything you would like to leave people with?
I'm pretty complete, Vicki. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and I'd like to thank you, Jonathan, for joining us and wish you well in your work with nonviolence with Tache Bene, and also wishing you well in your own journey of forgiving again and again. Michael, thank you so much for everything that you're contributing, not only to this show, but helping so many of us understand and appreciate the role of forgiveness in personal as well as national histories.
Thank you so very much.
And all of you, I would encourage you to just find one thing this week, however small, that you've been holding on to, and see if you can find it in your own heart to begin the process of forgiving that one thing. And stay with us. Join us again next week on A Call to Greatness when we look at the topic of abundance, what that is, what it isn't, how you get there. Thank you all for joining me. God bless you. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you for listening to A Call to Greatness. To contact Victoria, visit spiritalive.com. Tune in next Wednesday for another profound hour on A Call to Greatness with Victoria Post.